All right, we're going to continue now. The next presentation is effects of DMI fungicide applications on secondary metabolites in creeping bentgrass, DP Shell, BJ Horvath, DA Copsil, University of Tennessee, and DP Shell will be presenting.
All right, thank you, Dr. Henry. Today, I'd like to spend a few minutes talking about one part of my master's project. I'll spend a few minutes going through some of the importances of creeping bentgrass and the DMI fungicides, followed by some of the materials and methods I've used, go through a few results, and finally end with a conclusion and some of the future work. Creeping bentgrass is an important turf grass widely used on tees, greens, and fairways on golf courses. Due to close mowing heights and some of the other maintenance practices associated with the upkeep of creeping bentgrass, it is often subjected to numerous stresses. In this picture, taken at the golf course where I used to be the assistant superintendent, you can see these trees that are planted directly behind the green. And while they may not look that big right now, as they continue to grow, the roots will continue to compete with the turf grass for water and nutrients. Applications of DMI fungicides are commonly made to control diseases such as brown patch and dollar spot. Propiconazole and tebuconazole belong to a group of compounds within the DMI class of fungicides known as triazoles. Triazoles have been developed as either for use as either plant growth regulators or fungicides. Although there's still some questions about how these DMI fungicides may be affecting the physiology of the plant. Gilley and Fletcher in 1997 initiated a study in which they took 10-day-old wheat seedlings that had been treated with three different triazoles, tetraconazole, propiconazole, and paclobutrazole. They subjected the wheat seedlings to a 10-day drought period followed by a 10-day recovery period. And what they found was that the three triazole-treated seedlings had significantly more regrowth than the untreated plants did. One possible reason for this is how the DMIs affect the gibberellic pathway. The DMIs inhibit the synthesis of the carine to carinoic acid, as indicated by the red X. Gibberellins have many important roles in the plant, one of which is cell elongation. And so what we're interested in is if we reduce the cell elongation of the plant, can we get a shift in the products over to the carotenoid pathway, thereby increasing the stress protection of the plant? Here's kind of a simplified diagram of the carotenoid pathway. This carotenoid pathway is formed when two molecules of geranyl-geranyl pyrophosphate come together to form the first carotenoid phytoene via phytoene synthase. Now, there's two different types of carotenoids, the carotenes, and they contain things like alpha-carotene and beta-carotene, and then the xanthophylls, like zeaxanthin, anthraxanthin, and violoxanthin. Carotenoids play many roles in the plant, including light harvesting and protection from UV light. Zeaxanthin plays an especially important role in the quenching of reactive oxygen species within the plant. Now, normally, the product can change or flux back and forth between zeaxanthin and violoxanthin through the intermediate carotenoid anthraxanthin. McElroy et al. In 2006 did a study with creeping bentgrass in which they exposed it to high light and low light. And what they found was that as the plants were shifted to the high light, there was an increase in the zeaxanthin concentrations, indicating that the plants were under more stress and thereby needing more of the zeaxanthin, which, as I mentioned earlier, acts as a powerful antioxidant in the plant. So that leads us to the first objective of my project, and that is to determine if applications of propiconazole and tebuconazole can increase the total number of carotenoids in the plant. This experiment was set up as a randomized complete block with a 2x3 factorial treatment arrangement. The two fungicides, propiconazole and tebuconazole, and the three rates were 0, 976, and 1,952 grams per hectare. We used six replications, a spray volume of 815 liters per hectare, and we made two applications at 7 days apart. Pots of creeping bentgrass variety Penn A1 were seeded in the greenhouse at a rate of 48 kilograms per hectare. Two applications of 20-20-20 at a rate of 48 kilograms per hectare were made to encourage growth and development. The pots were maintained at 4 millimeters. Weekly measurements of chlorophyll fluorescence yield and digital image analysis were taken, and carotenoid and chlorophyll analysis after the harvest. Due to the sake of time, however, I will only be talking about the carotenoid and chlorophyll analysis. Harvest techniques followed the techniques that were cited in Elmore et al. 2011. The grass was harvested 7 days after the last application and immediately flash frozen using liquid nitrogen. Prior to extraction, the tissue samples were ground with liquid nitrogen using a mortar and pestle. A 0.25 gram sample of tissue was weighed out into a test tube, 2.5 milliliters of tetrahydrofuran and 800 microliters of an internal standard were added to the test tube. At that point, the sample was homogenized using a tabletop drill press. After the sample had been homogenized, it was placed in a centrifuge for approximately 5 minutes. After the 5 minutes were up, the test tube was removed and the supernatant was removed from the test tube and saved for later use. After the sample was then rehydrated with 2 milliliters of tetrahydrofuran, and this process was repeated until the sample was colorless, which took approximately 4 to 6 times. After the final extraction, the sample was reduced using a nitrogen evaporator until it reached a level of 0.5 milliliter, at which time acetone was added to the test tube to bring the sample back up to 5 milliliters. Pigment concentrations were determined using an HPL machine with a C30 reverse phase column. Carotenoids and the internal standard were detected at 453 nanometers, chlorophyll A at 652 nanometers, and chlorophyll B at 665 nanometers. The mobile phase used was 11% methyl tert-butyl ether, 88.9% methanol, and 0.01% triethylamine, with a flow rate of 1 milliliter per minute. Analysis of variance was conducted in SAS 9.2 using PROC mix. The significance level was set at 0.05, and Fisher's predicted LSD was used to separate treatment means. Now, as I stated earlier in my objective slide, our goal was to see if we could increase the total number of carotenoids in the plant. As you can see by the SANOVA table, neither fungicide nor rate were significant in this experiment. So that led us to start looking at other places, and we looked at the xanthophyll cycle pigments, the zeaxanthin, anthraxanthin, and violaxanthin. We found that the fungicide had a significant effect on the zeaxanthin and the violaxanthin. So when we looked at the numbers, what we found was that the zeaxanthin concentrations were lower than the untreated, and then the violaxanthin was higher than the untreated plants. And this led us to believe that the plants were under less stress. McRoy et al. In the 2006 study that I mentioned earlier with the creeping bentgrass found that as the plants went from the high light back to a lower light, the zeaxanthin concentrations decreased. Brosnan et al. In 2011 did a study on Bermuda grass in which they applied three different HPPD inhibiting herbicides. And they found that the zeaxanthin and anthraxanthin concentrations increased on the treated plants. Moving on to the chlorophyll contents, we can see a similar trend from the xanthophyll cycles in that only fungicide was significant. Then looking at chlorophyll A, we can see an increase from the untreated. Chlorophyll B, same thing, we can see an increase, and then total chlorophyll. And all these increases equate to about roughly a 20% increase over the untreated. So moving on to our conclusion, we did not see an increase in total carotenoids. We did see an increase in the viola xanthan concentrations and a decrease in the zeaxanthin concentrations. So that will lead us into the future work, which will entail the second half of my research project, and when we move this to the field to determine if these increased levels of viola xanthan translate into pyrazeaxanthin levels under a stressful condition, and if so, can we get more stress tolerance out of that? At this time, I would like to thank my advisor, Dr. Brandon Horvath, and the rest of my committee, Dr. Jim Brosnan, Dr. Dean Kopsel, Dr. Greg Armel, and the rest of the TURF team. And at this time, I will take any questions.
Yes. How does this relate to actual in-field? Because, you know, we hear a lot about phytotoxicity with DMI fungicides on bed grass, and here you're telling us that, you know, we might see increased stress tolerance.
Okay, so I didn't really mention it earlier, but the rates we chose to, when you mentioned, or I guess the question was, how does this relate to the field with maybe possible phytotoxicity? We chose the rates we did, like the 1,952 rate, with the intent going into this that we would see some phytotoxicity, and maybe that the changes in some of these carotenoids, like the xanthophyll cyclopigments, would help explain under which conditions that the phytotoxicity happens. And maybe the stress tolerance, I don't know, we still have a little work to do on that.